On this week's episode, I chat to beloved Irish author Sheila O'Flanagan. Sheila's books were, and remain, a staple of many Irish homes. Held in the same regard as Marion Keyes and Patricia Scanlon, Sheila is a master at crafting a compelling story out of everyday life. Her most recent book, Her Husband's Mistake, is available in all good bookstores. Thank you so much for coming along to do this. I really, really appreciate it. So I'm going to take you back to the start then, if you could tell me about the first book you remember buying.
Well, I don't really remember buying my first book now, I have to say that. But I do remember a kind of a whole range of times going in to buy books. And that was always into Easons in O'Connell Street, where at that time the bags that they had to put the books in were blue and green, and that's just really strong in
my memory. Oh, the striped ones.
Stripey ones, that's right, that's right. And really, really strong in my memory. And I used to save up my pocket money. And so the first books that I bought were all Enid Blyton books. And probably because I was a big fan at the time of this series called The Five Findouters, which was one of our lesser known series, I think. Or, you know, when people talk about them, they talk about the Secret Seven and they talk about the school stories, but these were five kids and they were investigated mysteries, you know, and so everyone was called the mystery of something and the mystery of something else. And I just loved them. I loved the kind of, you know, the not the crime element, but just the way they unfolded and the way they kept a bit of information. I mean, you were trying to guess all the time what was going on. So I'm pretty sure if I had to pick what my first book I bought was, it would have been one of those.
Yeah, there's such a classic staple book though.
And well, they kind of are, you know, and Enid Blyton was a really good children's writer because she did know how to keep you engaged and she did know how to keep you turning pages. And I know, you know, she's come in for a lot of criticism and, you know, definitely her books would have been very far removed from my life experience.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I wouldn't have known anybody with housekeepers or scullery maids or things like that and living in great big houses and you know, having all the staff. And I wouldn't have known anything like that. But the stories themselves, it didn't really matter, you know, and you were just carried along by the stories.
It was also something that was very much of its time. And, you know, writers do have a tendency of you write what you know and what you're familiar with, because that's how you can create these really immersive worlds.
Well, I think yes and no, because, you know, as a writer, you can't only write what you know. Yeah. I mean, you have to go out there and
diversify.
And there are themes that you're interested in. And, you know, people often will say to you, oh, you know, is it autobiographical or did you experience this? And you're going, well, if I had experienced all those things now, I'd be in the funny farm and there's just no way.
Yeah.
So you do have to go outside yourself. But at the same time, probably at the time that she was writing, the children who would have been reading her books would have been all very much, you know, she would have been reflecting those children. Yeah.
No, it is. It's really interesting. I still really enjoy them. And it's so funny because they're a book that come up again and again for everybody.
Well, kind of interestingly as well, when I was a little bit older, I got really into the whole Chalet School series of books by Eleanor M. Brent Dyer. And like there's about, I don't know, there's about 40 or 50 of them.
Wow.
You know, there's millions of these books. And again, they were not in my experience. They were kind of boarding school books. But they were just so immersive, you know, and the characters were so strong that you really got taken in by them. And you know, they were kind of a step up, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, so I would have been reading those at about, maybe, I don't know, 12 or something like that. And they were a step up. And the school was actually set in Switzerland and it was a lot. Like, it's
very glamorous.
It wasn't like the main character, because it went through, you know, a whole, because there was 40 of them, that the main character goes from being about 12 or 13, you know, to having children and a family of her own later on. But she wanted to be a writer and she had a bad chest and I had asthma myself at the time. So I totally identified with this girl, even though, again, her life experiences, because her uncle or her brother or something, you know, was working for Foreign Office, he was working on a tea plantation, all those kind of things. You know, he's
very far removed from.
But anyway, you know, the thing about it is really, it's just instilling for children's books, instilling this love of reading and a love of way of writing and reading books in a different way. You know, because Enid Blyton and Eleanor Brent Dyer, even though they covered the same things on school stories, they wrote completely
very differently. Was it a book home for you when you were growing up?
Well, it was of my books, I have to say. again, like as I said, because I had asthma, I was often, you know, I wasn't really, really ill, but I often couldn't go out and, I, you know, I used to catch colds and I'd be not well. So reading was just a big escape for me. I was really lucky that my parents, very, very encouraging. And even though they didn't have a huge amount of books because it, we weren't a well-off family, like we could only buy occasionally, but they really were into reading and they believed books were important. So, you know, and I still have, my mum had a copy given to her at Christmas once when she was about 14 or 15 of What Katie Did.
Oh,
and I still have that copy because I have a number of copies of some of her books, which are, you know, that's amazing. So old now.
And it's so special carrying on
very
those
much,
things,
very
isn't
much,
it?
Yeah.
I'll never forget, it's slightly different, but my mother had this cookbook. It was her old economics, home economics book. And we'd always like bake biscuits out of that. And, and you know, having those books kind of passed along
absolutely.
The generations, it's so lovely. And it's like a little portal. It takes you back to a different time.
Yeah.
That's so cool. What about then a book that taught you about friendship or family?
Yeah, I was kind of struggling to think about this, you know, and thought about friendship or family. But I really think if I had to pick a book that kind of encapsulated family for me, it would be Roddy Doyle's Barrytown trilogy. Which, you know,
classic.
I mean, I suppose it's set not that far from where I live now, you know, and I know a lot of those people. Do you know, I they were so identifiable.
Yeah.
For me, I knew people like that when I was growing up. Mm-hmm. I knew families like that when I was growing up. And like we had a shop in the Liberties. And people like, he's not Jimmy Rabbit in the book, because I'm mixing up with the movie now. Just something. Jimmy, anyway.
Yes.
the dad. Like I knew people like him. They would come into our shop and people like the mum would come into the shop. And do you know, I could just see them all. And there was that big, it was a thing where people... again didn't have a huge amount of money, but they did have big families and the families were really, really close. And no matter what happened in those families, people really stood by each other. So looking at that, on the one hand, you know, that's a particular encapsulation of family, which I thought was absolutely wonderful. But in fact, most books about families are about dysfunctional families. And so pretty much any other book that you would read about family would be a more dysfunctional family. I guess, you know, one of the classic books of a family would have been Pride and Prejudice, which is not an entirely dysfunctional family.
Yeah, it's not the worst in the
out
there.
It's not the worst, but there are, you know, very, very dysfunctional families. And you can go along a whole range of books getting more and more
dysfunctional as it goes on.
As you go. And I think, you know, sometimes when I'm writing that's in my mind, that this family can't function well, like that there has to be an issue. But I think if you go for the warmth, definitely, I think Roddy Doyle created just a wonderful, wonderful family in those books.
There were, and it's so representative as well of so many different families and dynamics that up to a certain point didn't always get portrayed in literature.
Well, very much so. And, you know, I mean, I think that's very true. And I guess, you know, going back quite a number of years, literature did portray very stylized or very particular views of what families were like or what life was like. And I guess, you know, people like Roddy and you know, then subsequently, you know, myself and other women writers were kind of looking at the writing that was there and saying, this is not us. You know, and you don't always want to portray yourself.
No.
Do you know, you don't. You, like I said, you want to expand, you want to write about other people, but you also, I think, you want to write about real lives. And I like seeing that in books, and I think that's one of the things about, you know, maybe commercial fiction over literary fiction, where literary fiction, a lot of times you're looking at people. And you're kind of describing their lives and you're making kind of commentary on their lives. Whereas with some commercial fiction, you're actually living those lives with people.
And it's obviously something that resonates so much more with people, given the popularity of it. So if you look at the likes of yourself or Patricia Scanlon or Marion Keyes, like, it's those books that, you know, so identifiable, and you go back to time and time again because you connect with them. Whereas, I mean, I enjoy both. I enjoy reading,
and
you
so
know,
do I. So do I.
But it's not something I don't think I'd, even as a writer, be able to write, because I'm much more.
Well, you know, when I started writing, I actually I wouldn't say that I tried to write literary fiction, but most of the books that I had read had been very literary, you know, and that was, except my childhood reading, but, you know, and moving on, like, you know, you were led down a very, very literary path. And even though I enjoyed reading those books, when I started to write myself, I couldn't distance myself enough from the characters, you know, so, you know, that's why I end up writing the kind of books.
It is incredibly hard, though, to do when you're crafting these characters, because to make them very real and for the reader to connect, they have to be fully fledged characters.
Yeah, well, they do, and they have to be part of your life, and they have to, you know, you have to believe in them, I think. And again, I suppose that's one of the differences. Sometimes you look at some beautifully crafted and beautifully written books, and you look at the people in them and you say, I'm not sure that they would ever do these things, you know. Although, having said that, people do the most amazing things.
Yeah.
But I like to be into the book, you know, and I you know, it's just a different way of writing.
Do you find that you talk about them as if they're real people? Like, I'm writing my second book and I'm talking to my other half and going, oh, so Roisin did this now and Cronin's doing that, like, they're...
I don't talk about them out loud.
Okay, leave me hanging. I'm on my own there.
But they're in my head all the time, you know, and you're thinking about them and thinking of how they're moving on, thinking about the things that they might be doing or not doing.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're in a situation and it does make you've put a character in that situation and you kind of connect with that.
Yeah.
It makes you laugh, you know. You think to yourself, oh my God, art, life, I'm doing both.
It mirrors so much.
Yeah.
What about then a book that that broke your heart, and that could either be with had an unsatisfactory ending, or, you know, a favorite character died, or one that just really was a gut wrencher?
I'm gonna throw all of that into one book, and I read it back in the 1970s, and it was Love Story by Eric Segal. And I'm, do you know what? It didn't break my heart in the. It did, obviously, because, you know, Jenny dies at the end, so that is all really sad. But I kind of felt so manipulated by it. I could see where this was going, you know, and you just think yourself, oh, it's all going horribly wrong. And then at the end, you know, where Oliver says to his dad, because his dad says, oh, and I'm sorry, you know, it's terrible. And this says, love is never having to say you're sorry. And I actually shouted at the book at that. No, love is saying you're sorry all the time. And I got just so... So it kind of broke my heart on the one level.
Yeah.
On another level, I just felt it was trying to break my heart, and I felt very manipulated. So I don't know how I feel about that book. I read it once, and I read it again. The movie came out, and I read it after the movie. And I don't know how I feel about that book. Do you know what I mean? Like, on the one hand, you know, it was a tragic love story. And on the other hand, I was going, but did you have to write that?
Yeah. And I knew where you were going with this.
I knew where you were going. I knew where it was leading me. And you could just see it all being layered on layered on top of each other.
Yeah.
And just thinking, oh, stop. These two people, you know.
Give them a break.
Yeah. But anyway, I mean, good storytelling does get you in like that. But I just, you know, I think there's another bit in the book. And obviously it's such a long time now since but I have a feeling that the doctor didn't tell this girl she was ill either. And I was really annoyed about that.
I mean, that's serious malpractice.
Well, that's what I would have thought. But anyway, it was back in the 70s. So maybe maybe that's what they did.
That's grim, maybe, isn't it? Just like, let's just not say anything.
Yeah, you're not well. But we'll just tell your husband, but we won't tell you. So there was a lot of things going on in that book that got to me for various different reasons. But, you know, it broke my heart that it was so sad, but it also broke my heart that it was so manipulative.
Which
is a bit odd, but anyway.
No, I completely understand that, because you like to feel as if you're being gently taken on this journey when you're going through a book.
Yeah, and you like to feel really that it's not beating you over, that you don't, you know, that there's something that you're not necessarily sure what's going to happen, you know.
It infuriates me with books, even with, I read like a lot of crime books or thriller books. I find them really enjoyable. And it infuriates me so much if I feel like I read the first couple of chapters and go, I know how this is going to end, and that's how it ends.
I
love when you think you know how it's going to end, and then goes something completely different, which is great.
With crime, you don't want to kind of say, oh, I can see this happening, or also know the red herrings. You don't want to know that. I think sometimes, though, I don't mind knowing how a book is going to end if I feel that the journey is bringing good. Me there in a particular way, you know. And that's possibly why I was irritated by Love Story, because the journey brought me in a way that I just wasn't mad about. But it is actually about the, you know, getting you from A to B, you know, and how you're going to do that. And, you know, sometimes people will write to me and say, oh, it ended how I hoped it would end, you know.
Yeah.
And that's I that's fine. Yeah. You know, I'm happy with that, to be honest.
The classic example I always use with this is like The Boy in the Striped Pyjamas by John Boyne. It's like nobody set off thinking that this was going to have a happy ending.
Yes.
But it's the manner in which it's done.
Exactly.
That exactly. It's so affecting and so brilliant.
Yeah. And also it's not mawkish. You know, no. It's actually really, really cleverly done and brilliantly brought out. And you completely empathise with what's going to happen.
Yeah.
I never... You know, you don't sympathise with the Nazi guard.
No.
but as a child, you know, you're just thinking this is so horrible. And you are wondering, does that spark any emotion in you for all the things that you've done, you know, for this guy? So I thought it's one of the best books I've ever read. I think it's absolutely brilliant.
It's absolutely, it's unreal. I just love kind of anything John Boyne's doing anyways, but that is brilliant. Yeah. What about then a book that made you know yourself a little better? Or is there one?
Well, I'm glad you said, is there one?
is there one?
Because I honestly don't think there's a book that made me know myself better as a person.
Yeah.
I mean, I think in a general sense, every book that I've read maybe has reflected a part, you know, I can see a part of me reflected in it, or I can see other people that I would never know reflected in them. And although it wouldn't make me know myself better, it might make me kind of think about, you know, other lives and other people's lives and how, and I think that's what's so great about books is that they do make you think. But you know, just in terms of knowing myself better, I'm not sure that there's anyone that did that. I do know that I did think about a book that didn't make me know myself better at all, but made me think a lot, and that was The Power by Naomi Alderman.
Yes.
Alderman. I always get her second name.
Oh, that book.
And it was just an inspiring book in on so many different levels.
Yeah.
I love the way it is a kind of a riff on, you know, power corrupting as well, isn't it? You know. But also I just love the way the tables were being turned and where, you know, women had power and men did not have that power, how women behaved. And it was that in itself was interesting for me, looking at my own behavior and my own thoughts and my own, the way I you know, engage both with the other women and with men, you know, and I'm thinking, oh, how would I be if I had a particular power, if I was able to do things in that way? So I just thought that was an absolutely fascinating book and making you look into yourself and think. It didn't make me know myself any better, I have to say, because I don't know how I did make me think about myself and think about what kind of person you would be if you were in an entirely different situation, you know.
Those things are always so interesting to think about, though, because I think we're all generally trying to be good people by and large.
Yeah.
And we like to think that in these situations, we wouldn't be corrupted. We wouldn't manipulate or misuse our power. But the reality is, you know, humans are a lot more fallible than...
Well, the reality is people do every day. Do you know what I mean? And you'd like to think, that I'm above all that.
Yeah.
But then in situations, who knows? And I suppose that's again, like going back to that Boy in the Striped Pyjamas and the power and the corruption of the Nazi regime.
Yeah.
But I just thought that was just one of the cleverest books I've ever read, and just very, very thought provoking. And I also thought it ended brilliantly.
Oh,
and
so it was clever. Such a good ending.
Yeah. So of over the last number of years, that's one of my favorite books to have read.
Oh, it is. It's a brilliant book. And then I'm going to take us on then. I don't know if there is one, but is there a book that kind of helped you get through grief or loss or acted as a comfort to you at some point in your life?
I suppose, not really, but I guess when I need comforting, I read books. There wouldn't be one particular book that I would read or even one particular type of book that I'd read. I might go back, you know, if I'm needing the comfort read, I might go back to very classic books like, you know, Jane Austen or people like that, who where you pretty much know things that are going to happen.
Yeah.
But again, it's beautiful writing and it's very comforting. There was a novelist that I used to read in, again, my late teens, I guess, and her name was Mary Stuart.
Okay.
And she wrote kind of romantic thrillers. And actually, I do give one of them a little homage in the work doing at the moment. Yeah, but she wrote these romantic thrillers with very glamorous heroines, and but they were always very vulnerable. There's always something going on. But they were, it was one of those things about, you know, women at, and at that time, I'm not sure that there were that many books where women were at the front of the story, you know, and they were getting through dodgy situations themselves, and they were always really calm and collected and everything. And when I was miserable, you know, I always find they're really good books to read. Yeah. Now they're like, I mean, they were written back in the 50s and they're set in the 50s and 60s. And now every so often I do read them again, and the heroines smoked so much. You know, it's like every time something terrible happens to me,
like,
oh my God, did you live to be past 30? And they were all very together, even though they were all in their early 20s and everything. Do you know what I mean?
I'm just thinking, okay,
that's, we're all a mess, you know. But she wrote beautifully. Mm. Her writing is absolutely exquisite. Her descriptions were wonderful. Her heroines were really, really well drawn and everything. So that's kind of, if you're going to say comfort reading, that would be a sort of a comfort reading book for me.
Brilliant. They sound brilliant. I'd never heard of them, actually.
They've been reissued a number of times, and I think you can obviously you can get them on Kindle and stuff like that, you know, probably easier than
getting print editions. Physical ones.
But and they're all set in different countries as well, so
I love that.
So there's, you know, it's so glamorous. Just glam.
That sounds absolutely ideal.
Yeah, but I think, you know, they all bring me back to a kind of time of my late teens and everything where you were going a bit angsty.
Yeah, we all entered. All the feelings, all the hormones running rampant.
Yeah.
I'm going to throw a question now, actually, at you that I hadn't included in our correspondence. But it's a fun little question I like to ask people, which is a book that you would love to, that hasn't been made into a film, but that you would love to see made into a film.
Oh, gosh.
So you can take your time there.
I'm trying to think. God, that's really gonna throw me, and I'm not sure that I can. There's some great books that I've read, and I'm trying to think, are they movies or not?
Well, we do allow. Don't worry, if you're not aware that's a movie or you haven't seen the movie, you're completely allowed to say it, because we've had that previously where I love that be made into a film, and then we find out it actually is in a film, but you haven't seen it. It's fine. That's completely allowed.
Possibly Marion Keyes's Rachel's Holiday would actually be a really good movie, and that's off the top of my head. I'm there's a Spanish writer, Carlos Ruiz Zafón, and he wrote The Book of Lost Things, and I think another one's called it's The Labyrinth of Lost Books or Lost Things, and they're about bookshops that. Oh, they're not about bookshops, but they're set in Barcelona.
Yeah.
And they revolve around books.
Okay.
And old books. And they're very atmospheric and very gothic. And I'm thinking, that's the bit where I was wondering. I'm just wondering where they actually made into a movie or not.
Well, I haven't heard of them. So for the purposes of this, I'm going to say no.
Okay, fair enough. Well, I do think that they would actually make great books because there's a kind of a mystery storyline. Mm. It's all very gothic and there's books.
Which is kind of everything you want, really.
Kind of works for me.
You can just see it now as one of those ideal things that they show over Christmas, can't you?
Oh, it would be totally that. But, you know, it's Barcelona that you don't, people think of Barcelona and they think of it in the summer, or, you know, they think
warm.
And this is Barcelona with fog and autumn. And I've been to Barcelona in the autumn time.
Yeah.
When it has been a bit like that, and it is just incredible. Like, you know, it's very, very atmospheric. So if they are not made into books, that would
they
be.
They should be.
They should be. Or if they're not made into movies, films. They should be, yeah.
Brilliant. I also now want to go read them. This is what happens every time I just come out with a list of books. I'm like, yes, I'm going to read that. Yeah. What about then? Is there, and we kind of touched on it a little bit, but a book that you read again and again, is there one? Or do you tend to kind of read books once and move along?
Well, I used to read them again and again and again, and it's harder for me to read the same book over and over again now. But I do like, just for the absolute stunning brilliance of the English, I do like P.G. Woodhouse, and reading, I would read him, and he has so many short stories and so many books that you can dip into them and read any of them.
Mm.
And every so often I will just think, I would like to get my P.G. Woodhouse fix, and I'm going to read this book. And his English is so brilliant. His wit is so sharp, and his humour is so laugh out loud. Yeah. You know, really, really funny. Again, a whole period of time that meant nothing to me.
Yeah.
Do you know, set in a world that means nothing to me. But so brilliant. And he, in a foreword to one of his books, he said, paraphrasing, the critics for my last book said it was just the same old Woodhouse characters or different Woodhouse characters in the same old book.
Yeah.
And he said, but this time I'm putting the same characters in.
Oh, I love that.
And he's just so, so brilliant. And my dad, he was one of the first adult writers that I read. My dad had a big compendium of his books.
Right.
And he had a lot of his books. And I remember reading it and not really understanding them, but still knowing that this was really clever.
Yeah.
I didn't know why it was clever. I just knew it was clever. And so again, when I read those, actually, it does take me back to sitting at home.
Yeah.
And reading through my dad's book, and there were little line drawings in it of guys with martini glasses and everything. I'm going, what is this? You know, but they would be books I would read over and over and never tire them. You know, I mean, you could read one of his stories 100 times and get something different out each time.
You really can. They're so sharp and so clever. And that is a brilliant choice for reading again and again. We're actually kind of coming to the end of things now. So I'm going to ask you about the next book or books that you're planning on reading.
Oh, right. Okay, I have a couple of books. Well, I have a tower of books. Okay, you know, every reader has a tower of books. But actually, I just read that Robert Harris has a new book out. It's called Second Sleep. And it just sounds amazing. And I'm really also annoyed because it's an idea that I had myself and have never written. And so I'm kind of really, really irritated by the fact that he has this book. And the reason that I've never written it is because it's like outside what I would write. But it's one of those ideas I have. Yeah. I'm sort of raging with him now. But it, you know, reading the reviews of it and just the whole concept of it, it sounds brilliant. And I love Robert Harris. I think he is absolutely amazing. I loved his Cicero trilogy. I loved Fatherland. I thought that was just really, really clever. So that's actually, but that should be at the bottom of the tower of books, really, because it's
so new.
But you were saying that you like crime, and I don't know. I've just got into this new crime writer, and not a new crime writer. Obviously, South African guy called Deon Meyer.
Oh, cool!
And they're kind of police procedurals, and they're set in South Africa. And I think some of them have been optioned for movies, although I don't think they've actually made into movies. And they are just brilliant. They are really well written. You know, it's kind of like the Michael Connelly type crime procedural books, but in South Africa. And that just gives it a whole new aspect and new depth to it. And the characters, again, are brilliant. And it's really interesting because they have characters who are Black South Africans, they've white South Africans, and they've, you know, I think it's coloured South Africans when they're not black native South Africans. Anyway, they have a whole range of characters, and the black South Africans are all from different tribes. Oh, do you know what I mean? And you know, ethnic backgrounds. Yeah. Of the tribes. Really, really interesting.
Sounds fascinating.
And the stories are good, and they're well written. So, he was my summer read. I got a load of his books, and I just kind of went through them all. And also, my husband likes those books as well, so it's been a kind of a sharing thing.
Oh, lovely.
Which is also
It's always so nice when you can do that, because then you have someone else you can chat to about the books as well.
Yeah, and but it's nice when you find an author that you really, you just think he's good on the characterization, he's good on the plot, you know, we were saying, like, you know, that you like the plot not to know what's happening next immediately, and they're clever plots and really good characters. So
it's brilliant. Yeah.
So both him and Robert Harris are on my bookshelf, or on my
the tower
the tower at the moment. And then I also have a proof copy of Cecilia Hearn's Postscript.
Oh, you are one of the gifted few.
Yeah, and it arrived while I was away. And so I really want to read that.
Oh, that'll be fantastic. Yeah. That'll be really, really nice.
I think, you know, Cecilia has just been, she's an amazing writer. Mm. You know, obviously P.S. I Love You was her very early work. And, you know, looking back now, you can see that it was. But, I mean, she's done some absolutely amazing work since. And I think she's a fantastic writer. And, you know, although she does get, you know, praise and acknowledgement here in Ireland, you know, if she was a male Irish writer, I think she would be absolutely just getting prizes all over the place. Yeah. So anyway, I'm looking forward to reading Postscript. I think Cecilia's a fantastic writer.
Yeah, definitely. And that will be a brilliant book to read as well. You know, now if you read the Robert Harris book and he hasn't executed the idea as well as you could have, you definitely have to go and write the book now.
Yeah, I can't though. It's like, it's just, the idea is so brilliant. Maybe I can. Maybe I'll
never
I'll
say never.
Yeah, or maybe I'll look at it and say, okay, I would have written it very, very differently. Yeah, I mean, that's always really nice when you if you read a book that you enjoy, but you kind of go, that was really good, but
that wasn't.
I would write that differently.
Yeah,
but I do that. I rarely read back my own books now. But once I was asked to do a reading of one of my earlier books, and as I was reading it, I was going, oh my God, I would change all this.
It's amazing, isn't it, how time and perspective and different things change.
Absolutely.
And,
absolutely. And you're just horrified that you actually sent this out into the world.
God, I committed this to print. Well, Sheila, thank you so much for doing the podcast. I really enjoyed having you on as a guest.
It's great. Thank you very much.
And everybody, so we were talking off mic just beforehand, but Sheila's latest book, Her Husband's Mistake, has just been reissued with a beautiful new cover.
I'm going to tell you now, it hasn't just been reissued. Oh. That's the paperback cover.
Oh, sorry.
And that will be out in March 2020.
Perfect. So if you haven't got around to reading yet, you should. And it's available in hardback, so you don't need to wait until March, but definitely keep an eye out for it then in March when it comes out in its lovely paperback version. Thank you very much, Sheila.
Thanks a lot, Vicky. Thank you.